change is gonna come.
See that you actually are a leader.
I was with Nike for a very long time and built my career in retail.
You know, I think this podcast just got its first exclusive.
Being an entrepreneur is hard. The highs are really high and then the lows are really low.
That I'm actually really interested in hearing more about.
Building more and more books of business.
Can you talk to us a little bit about what it's like transitioning verticals?
Being open to opportunity.
How do I learn something different in a different industry?
And they feel like, okay, like, if not now, then when?
Hi, everybody. My name is Dahlia Strom, and I teach marketing at the Fashion Institute of Technology, as well as run a company called Rethink Connect, where we focus on storytelling through experiential moments. And I am here with my amazing podcast co-host, Pablo Henderson. Pablo, welcome.
Good morning, Dahlia. And I am the Chief Marketing Officer for Xwell. And I'm thrilled to be welcoming our guest for this morning, Chris Gronkowski, who is the founder of Ice Shaker. And I'm going to do a little plug, a very quick plug, if you don't mind, Chris, because we partnered with Ice Shaker when I was at Equinox. And initially, the only reason we really partnered with Ice Shaker was because the Gronkowski family had good connections with Equinox, and we want to keep it in the family, and we always love to do business with people, you know, who have good connections. And this, his product is actually one of the best products that we've ever come to have in our households, because it's my wife's favorite and it doesn't go anywhere. So kudos to you for creating something that's really, this was several years ago. And we still have ice shakers in our house that my wife like puts in the car, takes to the gym. That was a shameless plug, but it's a really amazing product.
And just to add
product.
To that, Pablo is a tough critic. So for him to say that, that's a big deal.
Yeah. And I can go into all the details of why it's an amazing product, but maybe we'll get to that later. But that is not supposed to be a plug. I just felt like you needed kudos because you actually have an amazing product. But enough about that. Chris, welcome to the show.
I appreciate it. I appreciate the plug. I appreciate it all. So thanks for having me today.
So we're really excited to talk to you about all your endeavors, but maybe it's worth us starting from the beginning. You tell us a little bit about growing up in, I believe it's upstate New York, right?
Yeah, Buffalo, New York. place of dreams, that's for sure. A lot of snow. A lot of, I would say, I guess, partying and elbow drops through tables. It's kind of what Buffalo's known for, especially Bills fans. But yeah, I was the middle of five boys, so it was kind of just the mayhem growing up. It's all about competing. Everything we did was, you know, who could do it better. And everything kind of just led to an all-out brawl by the end of the day. You know, if you didn't fight with one of your brothers, it just wasn't a complete day yet. So we were the household. Kids just came over. We had a really cool neighborhood. Everyone seemed to have kids around our age. And there always seemed to be, you know, four or five other kids along with us five brothers at the house just competing over something. Kind of just led to this ultimate environment of competition that, you know, eventually brought us to sports. Four out of five of us played in the NFL. The oldest brother never played football, but was drafted into the minor leagues for baseball. And, you know, just taught us a lot about, you know, really putting it all on the line, you know, really competing at the highest level. And took that into sports and then into business afterwards.
I think that's an important note to hit on. Four out of five of you not only played sports, but you got to the level of the NFL. So obviously there was a drive that all of you had internally. What do you think was the starting point for that drive?
I mean, I definitely think my parents did a really good job of raising us. They had this, you know, really it was down to a science is really what it was. My mom did a great job of making sure we were fed, making sure we got our work done. Homework was always actually first. It wasn't come home and go in the backyard and play sports. It's actually come home and do your homework first. Make sure you got your grades done. Make sure everything was done the right way, which helped us with our careers as well. And then my dad was always there to help us with sports. You know, he was all about, hey, if you want to play, I'll help you get to that next level. If you don't want to play, I'm not going to force you to play, though. It wasn't a dad or parents that were forcing us into sports. You know, my dad did play college football. He didn't even have My oldest brother never even played football. So he wasn't sitting there saying, hey, you guys have to play football. My second oldest brother decided to play when he got to high school. And that's kind of when we got the football bug. But parents did just, they taught us everything the right way, you know, how to earn a dollar, what the value of a dollar, what hard work was all about, earning everything that you had. It wasn't just handed to us. And I think a lot of it came because they didn't have the means to hand it to us at first. My mom used to sew our sweatpants back together and our socks back together. My youngest brother was wearing my oldest brother's hand-me-downs, you know, 10 years later. He's wearing the same hockey helmet and skates as my oldest brother wore. So at first, I think my parents couldn't give us what we wanted. But as time went on, my dad started his own business. He worked two jobs for 6 years until he got his business off the ground. And he did have the means to provide us whatever we wanted at that point. But it was still, hey, if you guys want it, if you want a new car, great, go buy it. You know, if you want to go to college, great, earn a scholarship, or, you know, go get a loan. So everything for us was, you know, you got to earn it. And I think that mentality just gets you so far, not just in sports, but just also in life in general.
And your great-grandfather competed in the Olympics, right? The 1924 Olympics in Paris. Do you think that your father had those similar role models? And so it's kind of like this legacy of handing down one form of tradition of success. And I guess another part of that was witnessing your father's work ethic and that, you know, building the business from scratch, your motivation for starting iShaker?
So beginning first question, my dad, it sounded like he was raised in a similar fashion as us. His parents gave him nothing. You know, he was walking to practice with his hockey bag. He'd always tell me stories, you know, nothing was handed to him. So he had to earn everything that he had. So definitely a tougher upbringing than we had. So I think that made him tough. I think that made him, you know, really want it more. You know, he took a bus trip around the nation his senior year in high school just to try to bring his high school film to different teams to try to get a scholarship, and eventually it ended up working. So that was that upbringing that he had, I think, was a lot harder and kind of just showed him that he had to earn everything that he received. And I think he wanted to pass that down to us as well. Watching my dad build the business was awesome. I was working for him. I think I was 15 at that time. When I was first able to work for him, I worked for him on the weekends whenever I could. And I would work in the back in the warehouse and also deliver and install fitness equipment. So I didn't know at the time, and I don't think I ever really thought I was going to be an entrepreneur. But looking back on it, it was great experience to see what it took kind of in those early stages to build the business. And then my dad became a great resource for me. Unfortunately, I didn't listen to him right at the beginning. I kind of thought I knew everything myself and I wanted to kind of figure things out myself. But later on, about 3 years into the business, I went back to my dad and really, really dug in deep and became a mentor for me and really showed me a couple things that took our business to the next level.
You know, I want to go back a minute because you said something that really hit a note with me, Chris. And Pablo, I think you can even relate to this a little bit right now. The value of a dollar. So understanding the value of a dollar, I think sometimes not only do we take it for granted, but now we can talk about our kids. How do they take it for granted? I had an interesting situation this weekend with my son. We went to a fair. He wanted pizza. I gave him a 10 and he went to go buy pizza, but then he came back and he didn't have any change. And I asked him what happened to the change. And he said, I went to buy these two reusable straws. And I was like, I'm not upset that you bought the straws. I'm upset that you didn't ask for permission, because to have money and to think that it's disposable is something that I'm trying to break right now. And I think to go back to the concept of the value of a dollar and earning what you get, earning for yourself and making sure that everything that you own is bought with pride. There's so much value in that. And I think that getting to that level is important on not only our end, but important for us to teach our kids. And I'd be curious to hear both of your thoughts on that.
100%. I can tell you right now, my kids, already got to that point where, you know, they did think money just grew on trees, I guess is what you would say. So Amazon was probably one of the biggest problems where they would just go onto the computer, select a bunch of things, add it to the cart, and they knew which computer was logged into Amazon and they would order it. So we had to make sure that that stopped immediately. The one thing that I did immediately was I made my kids pay for what they wanted to buy. So they would come home. I want to go on Amazon. I want to buy whatever. I said, awesome. You know, go grab your wallet. We got them a wallet. They had money in it from their birthdays, from holidays, stuff like that. I said, all right, if you want to buy this item, you know, give me that $20 in your wallet. So the first time they bought it, I let them buy whatever they wanted. They gave me the $20. The second time they went to buy it, you know, they only had a couple 20s left in their wallet and they didn't want to buy anything. So immediately kind of just showed that they now respect it. They realize that it is limited and they stopped. So they don't ask to go on Amazon anymore. They don't sit there and beg for the candy anymore, the grocery line or anything like that. So just by having them actually purchase with their own money a couple times completely stopped them from begging for stuff and expecting it to just come for free all the time. So pretty cool to see that that's kind of all it took. And they're already now starting to think about money in a whole different aspect.
It's like we nearly need to learn from our mistakes too, though. Well, I mean, we've talked a lot about this idea of positive role models and you're instituting kind of early lessons, but you talked about how those early business mistakes, you need to go out and make them yourself. It's kind of like the kids need to see, okay, I shouldn't have bought that. That was totally useless and now I don't value it. So I sometimes let the kids go and fail on purpose so that they can understand that lesson. What were those early failings that you had with regards to the business?
Oh man, there's a lot. I would say early on, for hiring was definitely a massive mistake. Not doing it the right way. So, you know, really just going and asking friends and family, not vetting or finding someone that actually fits the position, not taking the time and effort to actually learn how to hire correctly, was a massive mistake and led to problems down the road, and friendships and problems with family as well. So that was a huge mistake. I would just say overall business plan, forecasting, budgeting, all that stuff where I should have stepped back and took some more time to really build out a game plan. I didn't do, I kind of got stuck in the moment. You know, Shark Tank hit, so much gets thrown at you so quickly. It goes from this side hustle that you do, you know, for a couple hours after work to a full-time business overnight. So I kind of just got, just stuck in this massive increase in sales and an influx of customer service and everything you could possibly imagine. So a ton of mistakes. I finally had to step back years later and kind of just really dissect the whole business and figure out where the profits and losses were coming from, where all the money was being spent, and actually create a game plan moving forward. So stuff like org charts and budgets and forecasts and structure is so important. I wish I put it in place earlier on.
It's interesting because so much of what you just talked about has parallels with setting up for game day on Sunday, right? Like, who did you draft? Who did you pick? What was the strategy? What were the plays? How did you review? You know, like, why was it that all the things that you learned from football didn't translate to business automatically, immediately, but yet you obviously implemented them, but they were all things that you might have actually already seen through the NFL, yet they didn't translate to the business automatically.
Yeah, no, it's tough. I always say it's because I'm super competitive. You know, it's your baby. You want to do everything yourself. It's very hard to delegate early on, especially. So that was my biggest problem. You know, I wanted to have total control of every aspect of the business. I was good at it. I knew how to do it. And to me, I almost felt like I was putting a burden on my employees by asking them to do something that I knew I could do, that I knew I had the skill set in. So I realized pretty quickly that when I finally delegated, because I had to, because we got to a point where, you know, I couldn't do it all myself, and COVID hit and I had my third kid and it was just absolute mayhem. You know, I started to finally delegate and give those responsibilities to my marketing team or to my sales team. And the response was exactly opposite of what I thought. You know, I thought I was putting a burden on them. You know, they came back and said, you know, thank you. You know, that's what you brought me here for. Thanks for the responsibility. I would love to take this challenge on. I'd love to be a part of the team and take this to the next level. So it kind of opened my eyes and I'm like, wow, you know, this is that same feeling I had as a player. You know, when I made the team, it was, wow, this is absolutely amazing. I would love to take on this position. I would love to have this responsibility and become a part of the team and help everyone win. So I finally saw that from another lens and realized that I needed to really build out the team and really start delegating more. And once I did, it really took us to that next level.
You know, you mentioned something important. You said that the beginning part of the business, you struggled with hiring. And I've been studying, like Disney has this special training program. The Ritz-Carlton also has a leadership training program. I think that I'm also like just comparing because I'm in the fashion industry. So we like look at different models and like directly look at like Walmart and Target and the difference between their customer service, their employees in store. And if you walk into a Walmart, you ask an employee for something, they'll point you in that direction. Target will specifically take you to that destination. And I wonder if maybe it's the opposite just because there's been such a struggle hiring lately. Maybe the question isn't, are we hiring the right people, but rather, are we training them properly? Do we have proper training programs in place to help them, to help set them up for success? And that's something that's been on my mind for a while.
I could tell you 100% that I did not at the beginning. That was definitely a failure on my side. I guess as a business owner, you kind of just assume everyone knows what to do because you know how to do it. And you've never trained someone before, you never hired before. So absolutely, a lot of it comes down to how you train your employees. You know, the responsibilities that you give them early on, how you teach them how to do it. It's very important. So I had to really lock down, put together better manuals, guides, videos, so that they knew exactly what they're doing. Because if you don't know what you're doing, you don't do anything.
Right.
All out. If the communication is not there, nothing gets done. If they don't know what to do on a daily basis, nothing gets done. So I realized really quickly that if I don't put these different manuals and trainings in place, it's just going to hurt me. And I'm just going to keep cycling through employees. You know, if they don't know what to do, nothing's going to happen. And that's on me.
I think that there's something to be said about just the culture, the training, the elements of how you stay connected with them. And then also right down to meetings, right? I'm sure that you have frequent meetings to make sure that everybody's aligned. I'd love to hear your perspective. And then you can play devil's advocate.
Okay. I mean, my DNA is hospitality. So it's a little bit different. And I think that there's actually something nearly genetic about that. Like you either want to serve people, you know, and help them, and you have a customer service orientated, you know, personality, or you may not. And so that's transcended everything in my career, but it's also led to me having a bit of a bias in how I identify people. You know, if you're not somebody that wants to serve, it'll be harder for me to bring you into my program, into my training program. Because you have to intuitively have that desire. I do think that the devil's in the details, everything down to the meeting, communications, and this has all become kind of like cliche at this point, you know, like, yeah, everyone sees the same leadership memes on LinkedIn, you know, by one guru or leadership, you know, thought leader or the other. But at the end of the day, a lot of it has to do with coming back to some understanding of mission and what you're trying to accomplish. And then also a little bit of gamification. And I think that's important to keep the training in context. What I was going to say around kind of what, and I think this is still very much connected to what I just said, is the landscape is changing so quickly that yes, there's training, yes, there's hiring, but it's identifying this ability to adapt. Like I was doing some research on the position of fullback, which was a position that you played, right? I don't know anything about American football. Fullback is the opposite position in rugby. So it has nothing to do with American football. But American football, this role that you played, doesn't even really exist the same way that it does now, right? There's a much lower number of people that even play the position that you started playing in the NFL. And one of the greatest fullbacks of all time, who just recently died, Jim Brown, isn't even really considered a true fullback. So here's this evolution of a job, and you don't have to know anything about American football, but here's a job that started with a name, and then strategies changed, formations changed, the game changed, the strategies completely evolved over a period of time, and now the job is not the same job. And it's still called fullback, but we only need 17% of the fullbacks that we used to need. So if you have changed your whole life to be a fullback, you've now gone into this job that they don't even need as many, and the job is completely different. So what did you train for? And maybe you can educate me on this, but I think it's a parallel to automation, robotics, AI, the pace of which our business world is changing. And so training is key, but training people to be able to change, to adapt, is maybe the one skill that you need to give them.
I like that comparison.
Was I completely way off there with my American football analogy?
Oh, that was right on. Yeah, you're okay. Exactly right with that. The fullback position is, a lot of people say, is not even needed anymore at this point. So a lot of times it's filled with a tight end or even sometimes with a lineman instead to save the roster spot. So not every team carried one when I was playing, which made it difficult to make a team. So you were, that was good. That was good. I like the the whole analysis, because yeah, fullback used to get the ball a lot. They used to play a lot more, and now it's kind of this dying breed. So absolutely spot on with that.
So I think the idea is that you give people the training, you train, but then the external environment changes, something like Shark Tank comes along, and you thought you trained, right? You thought you had it, but something has happened with scale. And I don't even know what the impact of a promotional marketing opportunity like that could be, right? I mean, I can only imagine, but it's probably like turning on a switch or opening up a faucet. It went from drip, drip to, you know, flowing pretty hard. And you probably had to adapt overnight.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, overnight it's 50xing your business.
Wow.
Really, what it comes down to. So,
Are you just saying that, or you really 50x?
Yeah, I mean, we went. That first month, the first 30 days, we did about 250k in sales. And the first 6 months of the business, we did about 80,000 in sales.
Wow.
So it definitely was a massive increase. It was a side hustle out of the upstairs in my house with no employees, no warehouse. One product at the time. So. To get on the show and get 250K in the next 30 days was a massive, increase and undertaking for myself.
You know, it's funny. I've actually heard that because I've had a couple of friends go on Shark Tank, and they've had different situations. Some of them have been very successful, and some of them have actually, like, it's impacted their business so negatively that it put them out of business. And I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on how could somebody better prepare for that level of scale?
Yeah, I mean, I can see it put you out of business if you're not prepared for it, because it's going to be a terrible customer experience.
Yeah.
It's so much volume at once. If you can't handle it, if it's going to be something where they purchase and they don't get it for 5 months, or when they do get it, it's a terrible product because you rushed it. That's a terrible experience. That customer's never coming back. So that would put you out of business. A lot of refunds, a lot of money, being wasted. So at that point, you're better off not going on the show yet. If you can't handle it, don't put yourself on that stage.
You had a part of your success was the pitch, right? And I just saw Hamilton for the second time, and there's a famous song in Hamilton about, you know, your one shot, right? You get your one shot, and that must have felt like your one shot, and you were going to take it, and you brought your brothers along, and that must have really helped with not only your confidence, but obviously from a brand awareness perspective, it was easier. You know, three Gronkowskis are better than one. But how did you go into that experience knowing that it was your one opportunity? It's like you're on, you know, fourth and one, right? You this is it. Like we've got to make this happen.
Yeah, I'm sorry. My neighbor's lawnmower is like ridiculously loud. So I don't know if you guys can hear it or not. I'm guessing
it's fine on my end.
Okay, it is. Okay. Awesome. So it was a once in a lifetime opportunity. I guess luckily for me, I've been in experiences like that in the past. You know, going as an undrafted free agent rookie, it was a similar experience. You know, it was all or nothing as an NFL player as well. So I had to make that team that year or it was over. So the difference was for Shark Tank was I was able to prepare and really study, I guess, for the test. You can watch at that point 8 previous episodes or seasons of Shark Tank and really get to know each and every shark, really break it down, really be prepared for what they were asking for. So when I went out on that stage, you know, that once in a lifetime opportunity got a lot easier because I was fully prepared for it. I kind of knew what they were going to say. I knew their personalities. I felt like I was walking out and talking to friends by the time I got on that stage. So everything went exactly as planned, which was great. The first offer actually came from Mr. Wonderful, which shocked me a little bit because, you know, he's the guy that always waits till the very end and tries to just lowball you on some crazy offer with some ridiculous royalties on it. So it was pretty cool to see that he came out first and threw the first offer out there.
Actually, I have another question that's semi-related because what's been very interesting about Shark Tank is some items have like a very short longevity, right? So like you go on there, it's a quick hit. They make a good amount of money and they move on to the next business. But it seems like yours has lasted the test of time. How do you almost get from that level of, okay, this is not just a product, but it's a full-fledged company?
Yeah, for us, it definitely was a massive hit at the beginning. You know, you get all these eyeballs on the product. And we could have kind of just rolled with one item, right? And you kind of scaled it up and did whatever we could to just push one. But I wanted to build it as an actual company, not kind of a one hit kind of wonder product. So we took all the money from Shark Tank and I reinvested it into the business. So that $150K that we got on the show went into the business. All the money that came in, you know, from the sales from the show was all put back into the company. So we took it from one product, one color, one size, over 60 in the first year to over 150 in the next year. And I didn't take a penny out of the company for over 2.5 years. So I didn't have a salary. I didn't take any dividends. I actually invested a lot of my own money into the company as well. And pretty much every week, my wife let me know about how I was getting $0 back. But we were profitable. We were actually doing really well. A lot of people, I guess, don't see the fact that even though you're doing well, doesn't mean you know, you're chilling on an island, just hanging out. But that first 2.5 years was rough. You know, you have to build up your inventory. I had to pay for a lot of research, development, mold fees, tooling. And I wanted to grow it as big and as fast as I could to become a real company that could be sustainable and really carry on for years. So that was the game plan. And that's what we've accomplished so far. It's now been year six. We're on year six now. We have over 12 different bottle lines at this point, anything from a 1 gallon down to a 12 ounce cup, anything from a shaker bottle to a tumbler to a sports bottle we carry at this point. So we've really integrated into so many different verticals at this point. It's not just a shaker bottle for the gym. We're in grocery, we're in nutrition, we are in the gym space, but we do a ton of product just for corporations looking for gifts or looking for golf events or really anything you can think of a cup can be used for. So we are really all over the place and in markets I never thought we'd be in myself. So it's been pretty cool to see.
Chris, you hit on something really important. You said that your wife reminded you every week that you weren't bringing any money in. And I think that—
Have you seen the way these kids were ordering off Amazon? I'm sure she was.
But I think that like we can all internalize, like working 24/7 can have an impact on your relationship. How do you find that balance?
Yeah, that was tough. The good thing was I didn't have kids yet. So that was the main point.
They're not ordering on Amazon, right?
we didn't have the kids yet, at least not early on. Once we started having kids, it definitely affected my ability to be able to work as much as I was. But, you know, my wife was in on it too. You know, she had her own business as well. She's working hard. She's putting the hours in. So we were both just doing everything that we could to take the businesses to the next level. So when you're working with someone that's also, you know, putting in the same amount of time and effort into something, it was pretty easy to do at that point. Things have changed significantly now at this point, and you know, we found ways to really carve out our schedules and make sure that we have time for family and kids at this point.
What do you do? So people say carve out, like carve out is an easy thing to do, right? Like, what do you do to actually carve out? Like, what is some of the things that if someone were listening to this podcast and said, shit, I'm struggling, I'm trying to, you know, and in your case, you had two entrepreneurs, two people who are, you know, striving to push a business. We've got young kids, you know, we're doing the whole grind of getting them off to daycare or school. I can't carve out, you know, I'm struggling to carve out. What would you, and here's a guy that I'm looking at who's already gotten his workout in, he's already getting his, you know, his post-workout shake. He's recording a podcast, it's 8 o'clock in the morning, and he's still got a whole day ahead of him. So you're obviously doing something right, and have a great team. And I think that's one thing that both your family and your professional experience as an athlete has taught you, is to surround yourself with a great team, whether it was your brothers or your wife. So kudos to you. But not everybody has a great team and yet needs to put up big numbers.
Yeah, no, you hit it right on with the team part of it. So you got to build that team. That was the first part. If I didn't have my team, there's no chance I'd be doing this podcast right now. I can tell you that. You know, 3 years ago, if you asked me, there was absolutely no chance I was getting up at 8 a.m. And recording a podcast. I'd just have way too much to do. I'd be in my warehouse at 4 a.m. engraving bottles and shipping them out until 9, and then come home and work from 9 to 5. So I realized it just wasn't sustainable. So I had to build a team. That was by far the first thing. Second thing is a calendar. I mean, my calendar is everything to me. If I want to get something done, it's on my calendar. I always relate it kind of back to studying for college for an exam. If something needs to get done, you always kind of wait till the last minute. So I put it on a calendar. If I have 30 minutes for it, you know, as that 30 minutes starts to run out, that's really when I start grinding and getting it done. So I live and die by the calendar. You know, if I need something done that day, I put it on my calendar. I put my most important stuff on the calendar, and I make sure that it gets done.
Same, I do that too, Pablo. I think you do that too.
It's interesting because common themes come back around, you know, and that's, I think that's just a best practice. But hearing people articulate it in their own personal lives, I think, is really helpful, because
there's that expression. If you want something done, give it to a busy person, right?
I have a question about compromise, and I'm not blowing smoke up your ass here, but because the product is so good and because the finishes are put together so tightly and it's nearly like industrial, you know, in the quality, the paint coating on these ice shakers doesn't come off. Like with other things, like if there's branding on there, it doesn't come off. It stays on years later. You know how a lot of containers you have may develop mold in small little creases just from use? None of that. Like it's military ready, you know, like there really is a great product, but there had to have been points along the way where you were like, Man, we got to increase our margins. Let's cut corners here, or let's change the design here, or this is becoming so much harder. It's extending delivery times. What was it? What was part of the vision that made you say, I'm not going to compromise?
Yeah, I mean, there was no compromise. I used the product all day, every day myself. So I wanted to make sure I loved it. I loved every aspect of it. We've actually redone the bottle 4 times now. We redid all the tooling, all the molds last year, all the packaging as well. So any little tweak that I didn't like, I had to fix. So it took me 3 different versions to finally completely fix it to the point where I'm pretty satisfied at this point with the product. But little things, I could point out one, like this lid after a while on our older versions, it would eventually fall forward. So we actually made it so it clicks back now. So it actually won't fall forward no matter how long you're using it for. So something like that where I used the product so much, eventually it started falling forward when I was drinking out of it and it would hit my nose. And I'm like, I can't do this. I use this product every day. We just added a silicone base to it in our latest version just because after people used it for years, it would eventually start to chip just from picking it up and putting it down. And it was just annoying when you hit a table with a metal bottle, it would just make a lot of noise. So added the silicone base to it. Even the texture of the mouth, we put like a little ridge on it to make it more comfortable to drink out of, because it just feels better, just a better feel overall. So little things like that people are like, you know, you're out of your mind. What do you like? That's not even a big deal. But I use the product all day, every day. So to me, it is a big deal. And to our customers now, when they get the product and they see it and they use it for the first time, they're like, wow, you know, this is great quality. So that's where it comes from. It wasn't really anything other than the fact that I'm going to use this product all day, every day, talk about it every day. I want to make sure that it's the best bottle it could possibly be.
One of the things that is interesting to me is that I know that there was a kind of like part of the business plan was, you know, this is a product for gym rats, right? It's for people who are working out on a daily basis, and you have to embed yourself in that environment and that culture. And it probably came easy to you because you've probably worked out your entire life. You are obviously a former professional football player, so that's where you are comfortable. But to what extent is being around people who are motivated themselves, because the environment of the people who are in the gym working out, has that impacted you as kind of like this cyclical approach to, well, I'm around people that are motivated all the time, and therefore it motivates me? Because there's a big debate, right? You hear a lot of influencers, the David Goggins of the world, right, who I have no time for, but you know, at the end of the day, fuck it, just get up, do it, you know, motivation doesn't exist, you know. We're making the counter argument to that to some extent. And I'm not going to ask you to pick sides about whether, you know, it's about consistency or commitment or motivation. But I wonder if being around people in an environment with the product that you sell has had an influence on you.
Yeah, absolutely. I tell people all the time, as someone that is posting and, you know, has a lot of followers as well, I get as much motivation from them as I think they do from me. When someone actually tells me that, hey, I used your program, or hey, I used your post, or you motivated me today to get up and work out, what happens is I feel a responsibility to continue doing it. So if I post a workout and someone says, hey man, I've been doing your workouts every day, look at these results I got from the last 3 months of doing the stuff you're posting, you know, now it's not my responsibility to keep it going. I can't just stop then. I feel like I would really disappoint a lot of people that might be also using it. So I get a lot of motivation from other people that actually use my stuff and use my content and put it into play. So absolutely. I get a lot of motivation as well. From everyone at the gym, you know, if I don't show up, it's kind of like, hey, what's wrong? Where you at? You know, did something happen? So it's always great to have someone that's going to really hold you accountable. So just having a workout partner or some people you work out with has always been a massive advantage for me. And for me, it was my family, you know, it was having brothers
that I got to compete with every single day. I wanted to be stronger than my older brother. I had to make sure my younger brother wasn't stronger than me. So that just natural sibling rivalry just, you know, really for me held me accountable at all aspects of, you know, my fitness and sports and also just school as well.
But is that similar in the startup space? Like, do you ever say this is a competitor, we have to do better, or are you competing against yourself?
No, you definitely look at your competitors and not even necessarily just, it doesn't even have to be competitors. It can be a business that started at the same time as you in a different space where, you know, you might've met them at an event and, you know, you see they're doing big things and they're really pushing the envelope and really taking it to that next level. And you're sitting there saying, hey, what are we doing? You know, why aren't we doing similar? Why aren't we taking this to the next level as well? So yeah, stuff's huge. I all day, every day am looking what other people are doing. And if someone started their company around the same time as me and they're bigger than us, it's definitely a motivating factor for us.
You know, it's funny.
My wife said, my wife said that right now the Stanley Cup is getting a lot of momentum. And she's like, Stanley Cup can't touch the Ice Shaker. So I hope that's good customer feedback for you. But they're seeing a really good, they're having a moment, a social media moment, especially with women. And I think that those little details that you spoke about matter to people. And that's going to be what I think carries you when new competition enters the market, because you've made those investments, those relentless. It's about consistency in the relentless pursuit of excellence. That is part of the cyclical side of motivation. And that is what I heard you talk about with those little details, because those are little things that drive me crazy, but I would have never thought of. Like the little, like when the cap flips back down on your nose, you know, after a long time because it's worn away and isn't quite as tight as when you first bought it. It's very, very minor. And it's not like it's going to destroy your customer experience, but it's the details that matter.
You know, it's funny. It actually makes me think of like what I was actually going to talk about, which was not getting distracted by shiny things. So it's funny that you bring up Stanley, because we own a couple of the Stanley cups by requirement. My kid's school is insisting that they bring in cups with straws, so foldable straws, and that's what they're very well known for. And I'd be curious from both of your perspectives, how to look at something and say, this could align with our strategy, or this is something shiny over here. We can't get distracted by it because we have to stay true to our core business.
That's it. Yeah. I mean, I hear about Stanley every day. So know everything about the product. We actually do comparison videos to them and it does extremely, extremely well for us. So when people ask about Yeti or Stanley, I personally think it benefits us. It takes our market exposure and price point up to another level as well. So we always have compared ourselves to products like that, and we're able to say, hey, you know, here's the Stanley Cup, this is what they offer. Our offer is unique and different, and to me, I think it's better because we can offer, you know, a handle that snaps down. We have the easy open pop top, so it doesn't spill when you knock it over. We have measurement markings that they don't have. We have the silicone base they don't have. We have a patented twist and agitator that breaks up powders and also works as a strainer. So we throw all of our features at a comparison video. And a lot of times the customer that is looking for something that's a little bit different is going to buy their product, but also buy ours as well. So it's not even necessarily, you know, a one-to-one competitor, because they don't offer the same thing that we offer. And overall, like, you know, they're bumping price points way up. People are fighting over them. They're paying $80 to $100 for some of these cups. And, you know, it just makes us look better and better as well. So Stanley, is as much as people think it's taken business away from us, I personally actually think it's actually grown our business as well.
I have a visual of what it must be like when you line up against another American football team, right? Whether you're playing for the Colts or the Cowboys or the Broncos, there's another team on the other side that's going to be, you know, the Falcons or the Bears or whoever else, right? And they have a lot of great assets too. And you have a decision about whether you're going to back down or whether you're going to play to something that you have that they don't have. And you must be doing that continuously. And it's got to be intimidating when sometimes it feels like there are more resources coming at you than you're sending the other way, but you figure it out. And I agree with you, Dahlia. There is this distinction that you have to make as a business owner on a daily basis, but not just as a business owner, as anybody that's in a position of leadership around, is this a shiny object and is this a distraction to where I'm going? Because I know where we're supposed to be going. And I think that's maybe one of the biggest pitfalls that I see people fall for, is the constant distraction of the shiny object that takes you off course. Having said that, you know, we talked about change and adaptation, and sometimes ignoring that shiny object is a clue to the fact that something is coming to disrupt your ass real quick. and so you can't completely have blinkers on either.
I've been asked so many times and I can easily make that same cup. So to me, it's not us. It's not our game plan. It's just an item I could bring in that would be a flash in the pan, and it probably would sell really well. But at the end of the day, that's not our product. That's not our market that we're going after. And we'd just be following the other probably 10 to 15 brands now that have copied, that exact Stanley cup at this point. So I've consciously made the effort to not, chase after something that is not our branding, that is not us, that is not our goal, not our game plan. So a lot of people think that's a bad idea. To me personally, I thought it was the right play.
I wanted to ask you about something that's a slightly different twist on the conversation. And that was, you know, it's all seemed so rosy up to this point, right? Story, it's kind of like an American dream story. Guy who grew up upstate New York, working class family, big family. They all end up being successful, play sports, go to college, start a business, have a wife, four kids. Hey, this is a great story, right? But there were probably some real lows. And I was looking at your playing history and the injuries that you had and the uncertainty that you suffered. And you mentioned being undrafted. I mean, this has not all been a one-way climb to the top. There's been some pretty rocky, turbulent times along the way. And I'd be curious about how you dealt with those times of uncertainty.
Yeah, for sure. That was a absolute grind, for sure. Definitely nothing was handed to me in any aspect. So undrafted is very tough. To make a team is almost impossible. So it actually hadn't been done in over 10 years with the Dallas Cowboys. So to make that roster as an undrafted free agent rookie was very unlikely. And then actually making a team and staying on a team is a different story. As a football player, unless you have a lot of guaranteed money and you're a superstar, you can be cut any game. So if you're not on the roster on a Wednesday, you're actually not getting paid that week. So it was a very, very...
Hold on. If you're not on the roster, you're not getting paid that week?
Correct. Yeah. So if they cut you before Wednesday, you were done. There was nothing else guaranteed. You only got paid for the previous game that you played in.
Wow. I didn't know that part
of it. I had a 3-year contract, or 3-year rookie contract. It meant absolutely nothing. They could cut me at any time. You get your signing bonus. For me, it was $10,000. After that, there's nothing guaranteed, after that point. So if I got cut, I was going home with whatever I'd previously made. And that was it. I was on the streets at that point. So,
that really teaches you the value of a dollar.
Yeah, the stress levels were through the roof. I grinded my teeth every night. I hardly slept. If I came late, it was $1,000 fine if you came late. I was probably going to get cut at that point as well. If you were a pound overweight on weigh-in days, it was $500 per pound per day if you were overweight. So, you had to make sure you were on top of your game. Had to make sure that you were, ready, prepared every single day, because it could have been one play and, you might never play the game again. So yeah, it was definitely a stressful time. But I would go to bed, grind my teeth every night and I go to see the dentist and he's like, what are you doing? But it was just such a stressful thing. And that all finally stopped. The first day I stopped playing, that was the first time I was really able to sleep for the first time in years. Mental grind, obviously physical grind as well, playing football as a guy who, you know, really can be cut at any time. So that was kind of just the beginning. You know, the business world, very similar, you know, a lot of ups and downs. The second you think you're doing really well, you know, the next day you lose a big order, or, you know, someone quits on you, or something wild happens. So it's been a roller coaster ride. And for me, I try to just not get too high and not get too low. You know, I try not to celebrate massive wins too much. And, you know, when I'm down, I kind of just go right back to the drawing board and start putting that work in, you know, figure out how I can get better and what went wrong and how to fix it so that it never happens again.
No, it's funny.
Oh, go ahead, Dahlia.
No, I was going to say, just like listening to some of your patterns, it feels similar and reminiscent of like some of like Pablo and my day-to-day just interactions. And hearing you, like, Pablo, you said something really important. You said, like, until you got to the top. I don't know that, and you and I probably feel the same way. I don't know if Chris actually feels that he's at the top. I think that he's still in the grind every single day. Like, if he loses that order, he's back to it. Like, Chris, what time did you wake up this morning? 4 a.m.?
So I usually, my alarm sets at 5, but it usually doesn't go off. So I'm usually up before that.
Oh, really? You're up before the 5 a.m. alarm?
Usually, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. And what's keeping you going every day? Like, if you were to come up with like a one word feeling or like a one sentence feeling, what is that like motivation that's keeping you going and getting you up before your alarm every day?
For me at this point, I think it's the team that we built at this point. You know, if I don't get up, if I'm not working, if I'm not putting the work in, our team's not going to win, you know, when it comes down to it. And the business now has been built, and in the structure that I put in place is a team atmosphere. You know, if my team wins, they all win together. A lot of their bonuses and a lot of the structure is built on everyone winning together. So if one part of the team isn't winning, it actually affects the entire business and affects a lot of other people's paychecks as well. So if I'm not putting my work in and in my aspect of it, it also significantly hurts the team as well. So I built it that way to keep everyone accountable for each other and so that everyone works together. So the culture here has once I did that, has changed tremendously, and I'm a part of it. So I can't just sleep in or not do the work. I got to wake up and be a part of the team as well.
I'm hearing from you, and Pablo, I know that you feel the same way. Like, team is such a core part of what's driving that motivation. And it's interesting to think about and reflect, like, why do we wake up that early? What are we motivated to do? We're supporting something bigger than us. We're supporting our team. And I think that to me has probably been one of the biggest takeaways from this conversation.
I have this rock that sits right there on my desk, and it's an African proverb. And it says, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And it took me a good part of most of my life to figure that out, because I was the go fast and go alone guy, until every time I got to a pretty far place, the continuous progression forward stopped. And it wasn't until I had people like Dahlia, like this podcast itself is a team effort and would never have gone this far without me teaming up with Dahlia. And that's one example, but I replicate that model in other aspects of my life. And so I agree with you. I do think that, you know, knowing where the bigger picture is later on and running towards something is also important, because you talked about the grind. And it's funny because the grind is a funny play off the teeth thing, because I went to the dentist at one point. My dentist told me, if I grind my teeth any harder, I'm going to crack them. He was like, if you crack your teeth, you're in trouble, man. And that's how much stress I was under. And so I relate to what you're talking about. But it helps when there's something that you're working towards. And you must have a vision. And I'm sure your vision for whatever it is that you're building right now is probably pretty clear in your mind's eye.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, when I first started, people would ask what my five-year vision was. And it was like, you guys are crazy. What are you talking about? But there's a vision now. Yeah, there's a game plan. Everything's working towards a goal now. And I think that's what life's all about. You know, if you don't have that goal or that vision or something that you're striving towards, you're just kind of floating at that point. And anytime I feel like I'm floating, I kind of sit back and say, I need to reevaluate and realign my goals, because right now they're not hard enough. I'm not being pushed hard enough to get to somewhere that I need to be. So that's, I think that's huge for everyone. You know, anytime you feel like you're not progressing, it becomes a problem.
Do you keep those front and center with your team? Like, does your team know what the overall vision is?
For sure. Yeah. A lot of it is just aligned with yearly goals. And quarterly goals. So they know what we're looking for, what we're striving for, kind of that overall five-year game plan and where we want to be. So they definitely have a good idea of where we want to be every single year.
You know, I think about it through the lens of, yes, and members are a big driver, but culture is extremely, extremely important. It needs to feel like you're going to work and you enjoy what you do every day, right? Because if you enjoy it every single day, it never feels like work. How do you feel like culture has taken a big kind of like, has made an impact on your just team?
Yeah, I mean, for us, the culture, it changed significantly once I made it a team goal. That was by far the biggest driver in change. But, you know, previously everyone was kind of, you know, everything for them at that point was individual goals. So a couple of years ago, it was all individual goals. And it became an issue because everyone was out for themselves. You know, the sales team was going to do whatever they could to get a sale in, even if it really wasn't beneficial for the company as a whole. You know, they would put our fulfillment team in very tough spots, you know, on a Friday afternoon where, you know, everyone was packing up to go home. And all of a sudden, a big order comes in that they promised would go out by the end of the week. Just so that they can close the sale, even though, you know, the commission in the margin wasn't good, they still are just, you know, jamming it in there at the last second. And it was just causing a lot of animosity with everyone. You know, people were getting pissed at each other. You know, a big order would come in and, you know, the sales team would be super pumped and the fulfillment team would, you know, kind of be mad about it. And I was like, this just doesn't make sense right now at this point. You know, our culture is so backwards in the company that people are getting mad about a massive win. You know, that just doesn't make sense. So we had to realign everything. We had to set everything as team goals. We had to find a way to really incentivize people based on the team. And once we did that, everything changed. So everyone started rooting for each other. Everyone started helping each other. The fulfillment team started working with the sales team saying, hey, if you guys do it this way, instead of that way, we can actually get it out the door faster. You know, we'll make less mistakes if you do it this way. If you can, you know, let us know by this time in the day, we can actually get it done that same day. But, you know, this is kind of our cutoff time. So everyone started communicating as well. Everyone started trying to win together. And then it held everyone accountable. Like one of the simplest things we did was just do more of like a profit sharing pot for the fulfillment team. You know, for every bottle that goes out the door, hey, here's the 10-cent pot. At that point, if there are mistakes, in the past, it was kind of just like, oh, write that person up or, you know, bring them in the office and tell them, you know, they need to pay attention. At this point now, you know, that 10 cent pot, if they mess up, the money comes out of that pot for the mistake they made. If it's the same person making that mistake over and over and over again and keeps taking from that pot, you know, the other 8 or 9 employees are going to get on them themselves. You know, they're going to make sure that person's not continuing to make mistakes. And if they are continuing to make mistakes, they feel bad about it. And a lot of times these people actually are weeding themselves out of the company because they feel the pressure from the other 8 people or 9 people or however many it is that they're letting down. So it kind of became this ultimate culture all of a sudden, like overnight, just by incentivizing everyone as a team and you know, putting a little more out there. With that, like our, we actually, you know, you put this extra pot in and you think you're going to lose money. We actually have gained more from it because of all the less expenses from all the losses that we're receiving from products being messed up or the wrong stuff being shipped, in which no one was being held accountable before previously. But, you know, if you send out 100 bottles that are engraved with the wrong logo, that expense is a lot more than 10 cents a bottle for the month. So putting this in place, it completely changed that culture overnight, and it 3x'd our profit within the next year.
Wow. I love the idea of like deploying incentives versus reprimanding. I think there's something to be said about like finding ways to take those tactics to motivate people as opposed to reprimanding, which demotivates. I'd be curious what other strategies you guys have used to think about incentivizing.
Yeah, same. I mean, we took that same model and then we figured out ways to do it with every single employee. So the sales team was similar where, you know, they're all being commissioned, but it was all individually. And with that, you know, sometimes guys would be, you know, complaining like, hey, this guy has this customer, you know, why does he have this market? Why can't I get in on that? So I did the same, something similar. You know, I gave them individual commissions, but I also gave them team goals. And as a team, if they hit them and everyone hits that goal, everyone wins. And they also then split, you know, a larger commission that's a more based on a pot between everyone's total sales instead. So if one guy had a really big month, and the other two or three or however many guys did very poor, no one would be rewarded. But if they all hit the goal and one guy did really well, you know, that total would be split between all of them. So even the guys that didn't do as much or might not have the same opportunities because they're in a different market or it's seasonal or whatever it is, they still will actually benefit from the guy who crushed it that much that month and split the total commission that was divvied up between all of them. So again, started bringing them to a point where they were cheering for each other. You know, they were trying to help each other. They're like, hey, you're not at your goal for the month yet, but let me try to help you get there, because if you don't get it, I don't get that extra bonus either. So let's work together now instead of, you know, being mad because one person got this great customer and I didn't. So just the whole culture, again, there in that aspect of it changed with our sales team just by making it a team effort instead of just individual efforts.
Sounds like you've learned a lot through this experience.
Took a long time to figure it out.
Of all these lessons that you've learned, what do you wish that some of the coaches that you worked with had known to tell you, the younger version of Chris, that you could have been done differently in that your early years when you needed mentorship and coaching and maybe different incentive plans of your own to keep you motivated?
Well, I would have told myself to actually listen when I was younger, that it was all there. The mentors were there. The help was there. I just didn't want it. You know, I didn't take the advice. I didn't seek the advice as well. So I just thought I could do it all myself. You know, I was still super competitive coming out of the NFL, thinking I could take on the world myself. You know, looking at competitors, like they don't know what they're doing. I could absolutely dominate this market. And, you know, you don't realize how much of a team effort it really is and how much goes into play to get you to that next level and to really become a very successful business. So my words of advice to myself would be to actually get a mentor and listen to him. My dad tried so many times to help me out and, you know, I kind of just ignored it. And 3 years later, I finally went back to him and said, Dad, you have 200 employees plus, and you've been in business 30 plus years. How did you keep him motivated? And these most of these plans came from him. He said,
wow.
I put this in place. You know, I put this incentive program in place. And, you know, at this point, if someone wants to make more, they know how to make more. You know, it's very simple. They can, you know, sell more. They could rally the team. They can work together. You know, it's very, very simple. And everyone knows exactly how to get to that next stage. So a lot of the stuff finally, you know, came from my dad, actually. After I actually went back and listened to him and asked for advice.
I love that your first question to him was, how do I keep my team motivated? I think that that's that, again, it's a reminder that like the only way that the entire system works is if everybody feels motivated towards the same goal. It's funny because when I first launched my first company, 2010, I did something similar. I found some mentors, But what I found was I was getting a lot of advice that didn't apply towards my business, my situation. A lot of people had things to say, but I had to be a little bit more distinct in what I applied and what I internalized. And I also needed to be able to filter out some of the noise. How, I mean, again, both of you have probably had similar experiences. I'd be curious about how you're able to filter the noise and make sure that you apply the relevant information.
Yeah. One of the things for me that has been interesting with regards to filtering out the information is that I always felt like the advice that I was getting needed to be for right there in that second. And I then realized that a lot of the advice that I was getting was really great advice, but that I will probably need it at a later stage or at a different stage. And so that didn't mean it wasn't great or that I should discount it in any way. And so if you receive every piece of advice or every extra hack, you know, and you just store and you can and you have the ability to store it and not discount it because it can't be used tomorrow, then you'll find that you will use it at a later stage. And that's been helpful to me. The other piece is that sometimes when you're being given completely irrelevant advice, you know, like, well, you don't understand my industry or you don't understand my specific set of circumstances, playing that through and having to explain it out loud to yourself or to someone else actually helps you solve the problem for yourself. At least that's what happens for me, because what I haven't done is I haven't sat down and replayed this through. Like, what is the blocker here? What is the challenge? What makes my problem so different from every other industry? And that's where I may have either an epiphany towards the solution, or I may actually come to a whole new idea and be like, wow, I never thought about, you know, how this was different in this context. And now I can apply that to something else. Curious what you thought about that, Chris. And then I have one last question for you.
No, you hit it right on. A lot of the advice, like you said, just wasn't relevant yet. Like, we were too early, you know, to really sit down and, you know, to put this budget and forecast in place. It's hard to do it in year one because you have no data yet. You have no idea. You're building so fast. We're changing products. My dad's like, yo, what's your estimate on this product? I'm like, well, we've had it for a month. I don't know. I need some kind of data first before you can really at least accurately predict, you know, what you're going to sell. So, sometimes it is too early, but it is good advice, like you said, that I eventually did come back to probably a lot later than I should have. And I finally put it into play. So 100% there. And then, yeah, I love the fact that you said, you know, sometimes you just have to talk through things. A lot of times I'll get on a call, you know, with one of my guys, and I have no idea what the answer is at first. And just by talking through it and kind of bouncing ideas back and forth off of somebody, you figure it out yourself and you figure out the best way to move forward just by actually taking some time to actually think about it, you know, and bounce the good and the bad off of somebody that's also experienced in the space. So happens all the time where I jump on a call and 30 minutes later, I'm like, man, I'm really glad we jumped on that call because this is the perfect solution. Let's move forward with it. So I'm all in with both things that you said there.
This is my last question. Dahlia may have one more on her end, but I've always been fascinated about audibles, right? Like these audible calls. And now that I have a guy who's played in the NFL, what is it that it, tell me about an audible that you've had to call in life, but what is it that makes, what is the culture? What is the piece that needs to come into place for you to be able to call an audible?
Man, it's tough. So I would say the biggest audible I would say is when you have to let someone go in the company, mm-hmm. you know, especially mm-hmm. early on, you know, you bring in some employees that they don't fit, doesn't make sense. It's just causing problems. You know, you have one person that's just not doing the work, and it's hard. It's very hard to let someone go. For me, you know, I brought in friends and family members. So it was very tough. But it comes to that point where, you know, all it's doing is taking you down. You have to move on from it 100% in your mind. You know, it's the right play. So you got to call that audible and you got to just step in and replace that person. So that was the toughest part for me. And what it did then was it also made me realize that I need to put all the procedures and processes and training in place to make sure that I have the right person in place, because it's hard to do. You know, it's hard to call an audible and completely change out someone that's been embedded in the company. You know, even though they're not necessarily helping, it's still hard to find someone to step in and take that spot over. So that's my biggest audible that I've called is releasing or letting go of certain people in the company.
Then after you have to let them go, obviously they were friends and or family. Are you still able to maintain a relationship with them?
No, not usually. It's kind of what I've seen so far. And that's because of the way I went into it. You know, I didn't set the expectations up front. You know, now when I do, and I tried to bring in one of my brothers recently, and it was all just up front. Hey, brother, you know, this is what we're trying to do here. I'm telling you right now, if it doesn't work out, if these goals don't get hit, if these accounts aren't there, you know, we can't afford to pay you this. It's not that we're not going to be friends anymore. We're not going to talk anymore. Like, this is all business, and this is the goals that we have to hit, and this is going to be your exact role. Unfortunately, like, I didn't know to do that at the beginning. I didn't know how to do that at the beginning. I didn't set those expectations at the beginning. So it just got to a place where it was toxic, and unfortunately we had to move on. So I'm now at the point where I'd never ever let that happen again. And all the expectations are set up front so that if you do have to let someone go, they already know what's coming. It's, I always compare it to kind of like a football team. When you're going to be cut before you get cut. That's kind of how I want the business to be set up as well. You know, I'm not going in there surprising somebody, you know, out of nowhere on a Monday that they're no longer going to be with the company. It's, hey, you know, this was the goal, hasn't been met. You know, here's your second chance. You know, if you don't get these numbers up, you know, we have to move on. Not because I don't like you, but because, you know, this is what it's going to take to be successful in this position.
You're 1 pound overweight, and here's your $500 fine.
Per day. There's a lot of guys that lost a lot of money on that.
I have learned so much from this. And for anyone that's listening, I'll tell you, if you're looking for an amazing product, Iceshaker is where it's at. But if you are the corporate decision maker, like I have been on many occasions, because I'm a chief marketing officer, a VP of marketing, and you want to order some really cool swag, I think that your logo on an ice shaker is a great way to communicate with your customers and build some fun team culture in the company. So thanks for being on the podcast, Dalia. I'll let you close it out because you always leave us with words of wisdom. So Chris, thank you.
Chris,
thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. I think my biggest takeaway from this was you need to do sports at an early age. It almost sets you up for success to be a team player. And that was so massive for me. I have young kids. I think about this every day. We're a very big lacrosse family. So that lacrosse and football. So that's been like really strong for us. But it reminds me that like it's important to be part of a team at a very early stage of life, because it sets the precedent for you moving forward to be able to not only be a part of a team or even lead a team. And that was really powerful for me today. Thank you. I think that we usually love to end this on some quick takeaways. So Chris, really quickly, what are some of your favorite books that you could share with our listeners?
Favorite books. I haven't been reading many lately, I can tell you that. The last one I read was actually Grit by Angela Duckworth. I thought it was... it's spot on. It shows you don't have to be the smartest. You just have to be able to outwork people. And I say it all the time. And you know, people ask one of the first questions when they start a business, you know, should I go and get a patent? I'm like, no, like prove this first. You don't need a patent. You know, if you do it better than everyone else does it, you don't really need anything that's different. The difference maker is you. You're doing it right each and every time. You're putting that work in, you're showing up, you're responsible. They can count on you. They're going to come back and they're going to tell friends about you as well. So people with grit are always going to win. It's kind of what I've seen. It's kind of how I feel like I've lived my life. I've never been the very best. I wasn't the best athlete on the field, but I made it to that level because I just kept showing up. I kept putting the work in. And it got me to that next level. And same with business. You know, you show up every day, you get better each and every day. No one's going to catch you. That's kind of how I see it. Like, competitors are going to come, and they have. A lot of people have knocked us off. And with any successful business, a knockoff actually means you're doing something right. But for them to catch me, if I'm putting that work in, I'm getting better every single day, you know, they're going to continuously stay 5 years behind me. So that's huge. So yeah, love the book. Grit, definitely a great book and a great characteristic to have.
And if you were to leave us with a one-liner for our listeners to stay motivated, I would assume that you probably close out your team meetings with something. We'd love to hear that from you.
Oh, man, the quote of the day?
Yeah, the quote of the day.
I always go back to The Rock, and it's all about consistency. But Dwayne Johnson has a quote just about consistency and showing up every day is what leads to success. And that's really what it is. It's each and every day putting that work in, showing up, being consistent. And that's what leads to success and greatness.
Pablo, I think earlier in the conversation, you talked about showing up every day, right? So here we are, full circle. Showing up every day is really, it's the key to success. If you can wake up and say, okay, we have a goal that we need to accomplish every single day, and you just keep yourself on track and on path with that goal, that really is what it comes down to.
You got to find new ways to find the impetus to do that, though. Easier said than done. And that's why not everyone's doing it. So congratulations to you, Chris, because you are doing it.
I appreciate it.
Chris, thanks so much for spending the morning with us. We really appreciate it. And it was inspiring to hear about your perspective and your view of the world.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on today.
Thanks so much for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe to the Motivated Podcast and also stay tuned on LinkedIn and Instagram for some behind the scenes and extra updates.